First this afternoon to the ongoing attempts by Gardaí to tackle organised crime gangs. Over the past year, Gardaí have devoted significant resources to deal with the violence associated with a number of feuds between rival crime gangs, which have led to scores of deaths. Assistant Garda Commissioner John O'Driscoll is responsible for policing the threat posed by organised crime. He's been speaking to our crime correspondent Paul Reynolds, who began by asking him about the ongoing gang wars in Coolock, in County Louth, and the Hutch Kinahan feud, and why these disputes have remained so intractable.
Well, we're talking about criminal gangs. Criminal gangs, their influence is through the power that they hold, through the money they make, and to protect that, they engage in murder. It is how they try and keep control of their organised crime groups, and that's why we must intervene and try and prevent them in fulfilling the plans that we know they are engaged in. And while, you know, there have been a number of murders, as we stand today, it looks likely that we may have somewhere in the region of 20% less murders this year than last year, significantly less murders this year than maybe 10 years ago. So, you know, every jurisdiction in Europe and wider afield has a problem with organised crime. But to a large extent, we are keeping it under control to the best of our abilities, while realising, you know, that there it is a terrible incident where any loss of life occurs.
Well, why is it so intractable? Why are these murders continuing? If you are on top of the situation or certainly making progress on it, how come these gangs can still continue to murder people?
Well, you know, they are engaged in all forms of crime, and indeed it is one of the features of organised crime gangs today. At a European level, they talk about polycriminality. They're engaged in a whole range of criminal activity, all designed to make money, and they're fighting over a share of that money. And in order to keep control of their organised crime groups, they need to exert their power, and that is done through murder and through threat to life incidents such as those that we have intervened in.
One of the consistent criticisms of law enforcement, not just here but also globally, is the fact that those at the very top never seem to be put behind bars. It's always the foot soldiers, it's always the middlemen or the people down the lower ranks. It's never those at the top.
All of the operational activity we have engaged in recent times is designed to dismantle organised crime groups, and each of the successful operations is one step further in towards dismantling the organised crime groups involved, and that continues to be our aim. And you know, we are making progress, and I think in relation to some of the operations we have been engaged in over the past 12 months, people have seen the extent to which we have plugged into international cooperation, and how we operate hand in hand with law enforcement authorities in other jurisdictions, and that has led to some very significant arrests of people who I think in any estimation would not be believed to be at the lower end of the scale in terms of their position within an organised crime group.
We'll take the major feud at the moment, the Hutch Kinahan one. You still have a situation whereby we have the two main key figures in those organised crime groups still at liberty, albeit in different jurisdictions.
Some crime groups that are currently in existence have huge power, which is based on the wealth that they have accumulated over time. Those crime groups will be more difficult to dismantle, but that continues to be our objective. And each one of the successes that we have made over the past number of years is bringing us towards closer to that desired outcome. And we will continue to deal with those organised crime groups in that manner into the future. And while we're doing that, we're also trying to prevent any other organised crime group from achieving that level of success within the criminal fraternity, and to ensure that they will not grow to the extent that the organised crime groups that you speak of have developed in the past.
Well, There is recognition of your success, for example, not just in this country, but also in the UK, for example, where there have been significant developments in Tamworth and the Tamworth area, which is often seen as the UK branch of the Kinahan crime organisation. And there has been successes in Spain. But then what you see is you see the leaders moving to other countries, such as Dubai, for example. I know you've gone as far as Australia, but that they seem to be able to put themselves beyond the reach of the law.
We have a very close working relationship with the UK National Crime Agency in particular. We work with the law enforcement authorities in Spain on a regular basis, Netherlands also. But as you will see in the recent Europol report, it also makes reference to the fact that Irish crime groups have tentacles in Australia. But over the last 2 years, you will have seen the success that we have achieved in that regard also. The Commissioner, Drew Harris, recently announced that our liaison network, which is mainly focused in Europe, will expand within 2020. We expect to have liaison personnel based outside of Europe. And that is an indication of how we as an organisation are also developing based on the nature of the transnational nature of the organised crime groups that we now have to tackle. So both in North America and South America and places such as that, you will see a Garda presence in a more formal way into the future.
So we expect to have a Garda presence in North and South America, as well as perhaps in the Middle East.
These are plans that are being discussed currently, and the Commissioner has made a commitment to extend the network within 2020.
And is that not only because that's where some of the main criminals are, Irish criminals included, but also because, for example, South America is where most of the cocaine comes from?
Well, that's it. We follow the criminal, we follow the product, and we're in there now recognising fully that this is a transnational business, and therefore we must have a better footprint in locations such as that.
Is there an overemphasis on organised crime? We know it's significant, but yet it only accounts for a small number of a small amount of criminal activity, even though it's well publicised. For example, domestic homicides. There are far more people killed in domestic incidents than there are in organised crime, and yet it doesn't seem to get the Garda attention.
When the Garda National Drugs and Organised Crime Bureau was established in 2015, at that same time, a Garda National Protective Services Bureau was established. And that is a bureau that addresses vulnerable victims in particular. And the word protective relates to protecting those vulnerable victims. And we've also seen in the months just gone by, a situation where we have developed an operational plan, a new divisional model of delivering policing, which the Commissioner has launched, and that arises out of the Commission on the Future of Policing and following inspectors' reports that have made recommendations along that line. And in the course of addressing, say, domestic violence, we are establishing a divisional protective services unit. In each one of those new divisions, there will be less divisions, but they will be enhanced divisions in terms of their capacity to deal with a whole range of criminal activity. And that includes the horrific crime that is domestic violence. So a divisional protective service unit in each division by the end of 2020 is our target. With the Garda National Protective Service Unit being involved in developing the training for the personnel involved, it will be involved in oversight of those units and making sure there's a consistency of approach to tackling domestic abuse across the nation. And that also involves developing our capacity to try and prevent murders that are associated with the domestic scenario.
Are you concerned about the recent CSO figures, which show that the detection rate is in relation to sexual crime is very, very low? Something like 2 out of 10 of those cases are solved, and the guards have been criticised by the Rape Crisis Centre.
Obviously, we would the desire is to have a higher detection rate, but very often in relation to crimes of a sexual nature, they are reported long after the event has occurred, and it takes many months to prepare an investigation file, and a detection may not take place within the calendar year in which the crime was reported. they tend to be more protracted investigations. But we have encouraged people to come forward, despite the historical nature of some of the criminal acts that they are reporting to us. We want them to report more of those crimes. They will be difficult to investigate, but we will investigate them to a conclusion, and that in time will result in an improvement in detection rates also.
So do you think the figures don't reflect your ability to solve these crimes? Do you think you have the ability, or is there something wrong with the detection rate being so low?
Well, obviously it is desirable to have a higher detection rate, but we first need the crimes reported to us, and we need the evidence to go with that. And then we submit the file to Director of Public Prosecutions, and it'll be a matter for the DPP to decide whether a prosecution will be commenced or not. And what we are finding also is that the establishment of our Division of Protective Services units has led to a much higher standard of investigation, which in itself leads to a greater capacity to achieve a prosecution in the first instance and a conviction ultimately in the longer term. So there are positive signs in terms of improving on the detection rate that clearly needs to be addressed.
In relation to sex crimes and crimes against victims of sex crime and prostitution, for example, it often appears that ethnic crime gangs are involved, particularly in this type of activity, whether it be people trafficking, people smuggling, organised prostitution, those sort of crimes. Do you see much of an influence, or how influential are the activities of ethnic crime gangs in this country?
Well, the first thing I'd say is, as a person who headed the Garda National Immigration Bureau for a good number of years, there are many thousands of foreign nationals who come to live in Ireland who are law-abiding, and there is a small percentage that engage in criminal activity. And that is no different to the scenario that pertains in relation to Irish people who go abroad, and some, a small proportion of whom commit crime abroad.
So there's no greater proportion?
It is probably no greater proportion than that. However, there is a Garda National Immigration Bureau that, in the first instance, that tries to prevent people from entering the jurisdiction through illegal means, through use of false documents, and we've seen arrests in relation to that type of activity even in recent weeks.
Would we see, for example, and I don't mean to stigmatise any particular nationality, but would we have an issue, say, for example, with Vietnamese crime gangs operating in the drugs trade here, like was mentioned in the Europol report, or Asian crime gangs involved in prostitution, organised prostitution, or Eastern European criminal gangs involved in certain criminal activities here as well?
We have found people of all nationalities involved in criminal activity here. We have also found people who travel from abroad who are exploited. So when you talk about Vietnamese nationals, for example, there is potential that a Vietnamese national who may be found in a cannabis grow house may be there to make financial gain, but there's also the prospect that they have been exploited and they are a victim of trafficking. So we must take all those circumstances into account. In the mid-90s, there were probably 6 or 7 million people moving through Dublin Airport. Now it's 32 million a year. So the ease at which people travel between one jurisdiction and another clearly brings with it the problem of movement of criminals.
In that European drugs report, which was recently published as well, they identified a pattern whereby major urban-based crime gangs are expanding and broadening their markets into rural areas. But far from working with local crime gangs in rural areas, this report says that the urban-based crime gangs are in effect trying to take over those areas and supplying them directly. Now, do we have evidence of that pattern taking hold here, where you have major organised crime gangs in the city dealing drugs directly to various parts of the country, whether that be Waterford, Athlone, Sligo, Galway or Limerick?
We see connections and there's significant fluidity about organised crime groups, and people move from one to another, cooperate with each other. So there certainly is an element of cooperation with crime gangs outside Dublin for the purpose of sourcing drugs. But we don't necessarily see any significant effort on the part of crime gangs based in urban areas to take over the drugs market outside of Dublin, but they may very well have been involved in sourcing drugs in the first instance. In order to bring drugs into Ireland, which may have their origin in South America or in Pakistan, it needs considerable cooperation along the way from a whole range of people at an international level.
Finally, in the community-based drugs report, which was published recently as well, they talk about local criminal gangs trying to create no-go policing areas. Now, I know the Gardaí will always say there is no part of this country that they won't go into, and that's true. But it's also true to say there are certain parts of this country that the Gardaí won't go into unless they have the armed support unit with them, and that's not really a sustainable way to police parts of the country in the long term. I mean, isn't there some evidence that criminal gangs, particularly at a local level in the most disadvantaged area, have to some extent succeeded in creating no-go policing areas and have succeeded in frightening the people and preventing them cooperating with the Gardaí, even on the most mundane and routine of inquiries?
Well, some areas are more difficult to police than others, and that is a fact. And indeed, the question that you put to me now as an assistant commissioner in charge of special crime operations was put to me in 1996 by Richard Crowley on an RTE programme in relation to a particular block, apartment block in inner city Dublin, which today is totally regenerated and has led to a much improved scenario. So it was always, there are places that are difficult to police, and that takes greater effort maybe assistance from the bureaus that form special crime operations when personnel at a local level are engaged in particular operations. But it is certainly our intention that we will not let any part of this jurisdiction be deemed an area that that is a no-go area in terms of policing, we are far from that situation at the moment.
Do you blame communities for being afraid and for not wanting to cooperate with the Gardaí when the Gardaí that come in are armed to the teeth for their own protection?
Well, obviously, it's not desirable that you have armed Gardaí in an area. It's not the most desirable situation. But if it's there for protection, and very often these things happen over a period of time, and then the problem abates. I worked in one policing area where there had been no murder for 9 years, and then there were 9 murders in the space of about a year and a half. And then, you know, things went back to normal again. These things happen in various locations from time to time. It requires additional policing over a period of time, and we have seen that in Limerick in the past. As I said at the earlier, the murder rate in Ireland, I think it's the 11th lowest in Europe based on a UN report published in July of this year. Probably by the end of this year, there'll be 20% or thereabouts less murders than last year. Things are improved. We are making considerable strides, I believe, in ensuring that we do not experience organised crime to the extent that some other jurisdictions have had the unfortunate experience of enduring.
And that was the Assistant Garda Commissioner John O'Driscoll speaking to our crime correspondent Paul Reynolds.